Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
All right, so you know how, like, when you get a salad, right? You get a salad, and then you get the dressing on the side so you can feel healthy, when the truth is that you're just going to put the dressing on a little bit, bite by bite, and then by the end of your salad, you've already used all the dressing that was on the side. That's what this podcast is. This is the dressing on the side of The Daily Show. I'm Roy Wood Jr. This is Beyond the Scenes, where we go beyond the topics and the discussions that we have on The Daily Show. I sit down with correspondents, producers, writers, anybody that had anything to do with the piece happening. We talk to them on this show, and you enjoy it, and it is as delicious as The Daily Show because it's on the side. And see, when it's on the side, it feels healthier, baby. It feel, right now, you're getting a couple extra calories just listening to me. What the hell am I talking about? You don't care. The piece we're going to go beyond on this week is the O'Reilly Factor getting racist in Chinatown. This is when Ronnie Chang responded to some racist-ass shit that was on Fox News. If you didn't see the original segment, Jesse Waters from Fox News, this is during the 2016 election, and Trump was talking China this, China that, and he went down to Chinatown to do what was supposed to be quote-unquote journalism and having a real discussion with Asian people, but really what he was doing was exploiting people who did not speak English and then going around town partaking in all of the different stuff that basically just highlighted a bunch of Asian stereotypes. He got a foot massage. He played with some nunchucks. He played kung fu fighting. And my man Ronnie Chang caught wind of this shit, and he clapped back in a major way.
Am I supposed to bow to say hello?
Lei hao.
I like these watches. Are they hot?
JCPenney, 398.
Who are you going to vote for?
Clinton's wife.
Clinton's wife has a name. What is it?
Oh, man. I forget it.
Snap out of it.
Do you know karate?
Yeah, I know.
Hit my hand. Oh, that's the spot. Is it the year of the dragon? Rabbit?
No, it's actually the year of go f*** yourself. What the hell was that? How was that on the news? In fact, how was that even on TV? Where the f*** did this come from? I mean, everyone's been wondering who'd be the target of 2016's worst racism. I didn't even know Asians were in the running.
Okay, so we're going to discuss the rise of anti-Asian hate in this country, where it came from, what we can do to stop it. And a little later in the program, we're going to be joined by Norman Chin, the CEO and co-founder of Leading Asian Americans Unite for Change. But first, it is my pleasure to go beyond the scenes with my office mate. He is my friend. You're my day one, man. You're my day one from my first day at The Daily Show. You were right there. I think I beat you to the
you're
building by
too.
5 minutes, which makes me the senior correspondent because I beat you to the building by 5 minutes on our first day. Ronnie, you did this piece. This is Ronnie Chang, by the way, Daily Show correspondent extraordinaire, Ronnie Chang.
Yeah, thanks for talking about this, man, and you're my day one, too.
You and I are good friends, and we talk a lot in our office. Like, we actually discussed at one moment doing a podcast together of just us rambling and shit, just our rambles, but I think we both decided that we talk about a lot of stuff that should remain off the record.
I think you didn't even say we should talk about it. You said you wanted to install cameras and just keep it on record and then cut clips about what was...
Yeah.
Cut simple clips. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I wanted to Big Brother our office. Just a live stream of Roy and Ronnie just solving every problem. Which, speaking of solving problems, Ronnie...
It's going to be a lot of you eating Subway sandwich. That's what it's going to be.
Hey, we will discuss Subway tuna later, okay? They said it's tuna. They just don't know which kind of tuna. That's good. We're getting off subject. Ronnie, in 2016, why did you fail to solve Asian racism, anti-Asian sentiment? Why did you fail?
It was a bait and switch. I thought we solved it. I thought racism was over after that video. And then, you know, they did a pump fake. And then they went the other way and it came back. They came back hard. They racism came back and went hard to the rim. You know what I mean?
Racism.
It like
was
broke
down,
the bad board.
Anti-Asian racism. It was down 0-2 like the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah.
And gave itself a locker room.
And it
room
came
speech.
Back hard. They came back so hard. Yeah.
We joke a lot in the show, but this was a piece that, you know, it was what we call in the Daily Show offices a quick turn. This is where the news breaks, and rather than go through a formal booking, Ronnie was like, yo, where's the camera? I'm going to Chinatown. Just for the people who don't know, who've missed a piece, give me the backstory on what lit this fire so fast. From the time this piece aired on Fox News, I think our response aired maybe 36 hours later, if that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So once things hit the zeitgeist in American news, then it starts to enter the building a bit. And The underlying story, which was the Fox News story, was actually causing so much grief in America that it hit the pop culture zeitgeist, and then that entered the building, it already entered the building the day before, but it started building overnight to the point where The Daily Show had to address it. We decided to go to Chinatown to get the response of people from that neighborhood who were interviewed, the same neighborhood that was interviewed in the Fox News segment. And we went down, and I was worried that because in Singapore and Malaysia, people get really apathetic about politics, and they're very hesitant to be on screen, and they're very hesitant to be on screen talking about politics. So I didn't know if that would be the same thing we would face in New York City Chinatown. But what we found, the entire Daily Show team found, was that it was the exact opposite. Because as soon as we got to New York City Chinatown, people, literally as soon as we got out of the car and I was dressed in the suit, and they as soon as they saw me, they're like, hey, are you here to talk about that thing that happened yesterday? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, come over here. And then they brought us to the place in Chinatown, and people lined up around the block to talk to us.
They lined up.
So it was like,
That doesn't happen normally.
Yeah, people don't normally line up to talk to us. So I was just standing there as people came one after the other to come and bitch about what happened yesterday.
What are your thoughts on the Jesse Waters video on Fox News?
The chicken reporter who came down here and thought he was big because he talked to people who couldn't speak English.
Yeah, that douchebag piece of
the one with no testicles, the one who came down here who said, let me talk to some old people and let me put them on camera without asking them and sort of put them on national television and made fun of them in the worst possible way, that asshole.
Okay, I think we're talking about the same guy.
Right. What was the question again?
I can't even remember.
The whole idea behind the piece was that, and this came from Trevor, was the idea that just because people aren't speaking your language, whatever your language is, doesn't mean they don't have sophisticated thoughts on politics and the way the country should be run. So that was the idea we were doing in Chinatown, which was trying to get their opinions. And in many cases, we kind of asked them to speak Chinese or Cantonese just to make the point that you can have sophisticated thoughts in languages other than English. And so, yeah, the response was, you know, it required almost no effort on our part. The streets did the talking on that one.
You're more Zen dude than me. But the thing that I found most interesting about this piece for you was the lack of anger from you as a correspondent. That's the thing I'm always suppressing. Like, dude, when I'm out, like when we did the Republican National Convention 2016 and we did the piece, When Was America Great? And I'm having to look at people, look me in my black ass eyes and tell me America was great during slavery. And I'm trying not to. So when you went down to Chinatown on a piece as an Asian, was this personal? Was this a more personal piece for you?
Yeah. I mean, it felt like a direct personal attack. But at the same time, you know, at the Daily Show, you know the drill, man. It's like what, like in the emergency room. It's like we see so much crap every day that in order to operate professionally, you become kind of desensitized and you're just here to treat the patients. And so we just keep seeing car crashes every single day. Eventually, you're like, oh, yeah, like you have an objective view of it. And also, I was pretty pissed going back to the studio. And I remember we brought the footage back. And this is, again, speaks to the team at The Daily Show, is that we went out to shoot, went back, edited whatever we shot, wrote the desk piece and on the same night, right? And we recorded it the same night. Like you know, field pieces are usually separate to desk pieces, but this was like the perfect merging of chat with Trevor and a desk piece and a field element and man on the street all in one day. I mean, for me, and this is early on in my Daily Show, I was maybe 1 year in. And I was like, man, this is the Daily Show at its best. You know, everyone's operating and firing on all cylinders in a very short time frame. And sorry, to answer your question about not being pissed off, I mean, part of it is the job. And part of it is, I always feel like, because I'm a first generation immigrant to America, so I'm in America because by choice, like I want to be there. And so when I see shit go down, I see like, I also see, in this particular instance, yeah, you can say, you know, blatant racism, but the silver lining to this whole story was that everyone got angry by this Fox News piece. Not just Asian people, not just Chinatown, New York City people. The entire country was like, yo, this sucks. And that's why it entered the zeitgeist, right? Because if most people thought it was okay, it would never have, you know, blown up to the point where, you know, at that time, people were pretty upset. You know, everyone, white people were upset. Every race was pretty upset about this. So if you ask me why I'm not more upset, it's because, it was a cause that everyone already, you know, most people were upset by the issue already. And we were just giving them a platform to express it, you know?
Who was the target audience for this? Was it, or I guess, who were you aiming this piece towards in a way? Like, was it at the reporter that went out and did it? His name is Jesse Waters. I personally think we should bleep his name. Just bleep his name. Is it at the reporter who went out and said this ignorant shit, even though he kind of sort of apologized after the fact? Is it the right-wingy Fox News type media outlets that push this narrative? Or was it at the people that actually thought that what he did was real journalism and informative?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I think, honestly, it was for whoever wanted to listen to it. But also, I think Asian people in America, they never had a way to critique the media like that. I think the history of Asian American storytelling in America, there's been no one in the media to critique media portrayals of them on a big enough platform. So honestly, it was almost to put a flag in the sand and be like, oh, you know, this kind of stuff isn't acceptable anymore, you know. And it was a sentiment I felt that was already in America. And yeah, I kind of symbolically put the flag in, like, this is the moment. But and I was lucky to happen to be in a position to do it, right? Because we're on the show that criticizes news and media. That's what our show essentially is, right? And so I happen to be on the perfect platform to do it. But like I said, I think most people in America didn't think it was okay even at the time.
No, not in the least. The thing that's so interesting about this country, though, is that every minority group is dealing with their own racism too. So then when you find out about the new racism, it's like, oh, okay, well, I'll be right there in a second. I'm currently getting beaten the head by a cop. I'll be right there as soon as I finish dealing with my own traumas. And it's very difficult. And I think it's very dope that so many people were willing to speak out, which brings me to 2020, as a matter of fact. Now, we already know the role that Trump played in stirring the pot from 2016 up until COVID. But at COVID, I feel like that's when the pot went from medium to hot. From hot to hotter for anti-Asian American sentiment. You know, there was a 150% spike in anti-Asian crime in 2020. And then also, you know, everything that started with COVID and it starting in China. And then Trump driving the narrative of, oh, it's you know what he said about it. I'm not going to even repeat what they called the coronavirus at the time or whatever, but the China virus, that one I can say. I'm not going to say the other one, but it really, you can say it. I'm not going to say it. I'm not going
to
say the K
word. It's so weird that we have to tiptoe around quoting the president in case we say a slur. We can't directly quote the ex-president. Yeah.
It's just, you insert slur here. Just whatever you think he said it. Like, do you think, like, how much of that contributed to the uptick in violence in 2020?
Man.
And the bigger question, do you think that Fox News and Trump were following their base? What, were they just giving the people what they want when it turned in terms of stirring up racism? Or were they leading them to this and then creating racism?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of their go-to moves in the playbook is to blame people who look different to them, right? That's one of the go-to fascist moves, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the easy, you know, when bad stuff happens anywhere, I mean, let's just say in America, then people look for someone to blame, right? And so I think putting it on a whole race of people is a way to direct their anger. I think it's also weird in America that they like people, I think Asian people were kind of under the radar a bit until this thing happened. And then now it kind of gave people an excuse to like go after Asian people if you're having trouble.
Them.
But I will say in America, I think what's interesting about being Asian in America is that you're kind of always, you know, the idea of being a perpetual foreigner in America, like Asian Americans aren't usually, like they're always seen as having to like answer for stuff that happened in Asia or, you know, like everyone's always putting stuff that happened to Asia on Asian Americans when they're very separate cultures. Like a lot of Asian Americans haven't left America before. They were like born and raised and they never left, you know? And so it's almost like, quite frankly, like African Americans being asked about stuff that happens in Africa or like Anglo Americans being asked about stuff in the UK, you know, like what's going on with Brexit, you know? Like most people don't know what's happening. A lot of these Asian Americans are just Asian American culture. But I guess my point is that's the way I kind of describe the perpetual foreigner thing is that you're always being asked about stuff over there. And it's like, you got nothing to, most Asian Americans have nothing to do with the stuff over there. You know,
the thing for me with 2020, when the uptick happened, when the 150% jump in anti-Asian sentiment and the crime started happening, especially in the New York area, you know, it was people of all races perpetuating these crimes, but there was also a lot of videos where sometimes it was a black person attacking an Asian person. And so as a black person out and walking around, I'm like, okay, how do I carry myself to make sure that the Asians know that I'm safe and that I'm not here to punch? I'm being silly, but there is this idea, and it's no different than at night when you live in a city. There's a woman 5-6 steps ahead of you on the sidewalk, right? I'm not trying to creep you out. I know I'm a big dude. So to keep us both comfortable, I'm going to slow down my step a little bit, give you 10 feet. So that you know what I mean? Like just being conscious of making sure that everybody has a little bit of space and that everybody's comfortable. That was problem one. Problem two was, for me, because there were two doormen that got fired in New York City for not helping an Asian woman who was being attacked on the sidewalk. And my thought was, wow, okay, if that happened, what would I do, me, Roy? And in my head, I'm like, okay, I'm going to help. I have to break that up. But then there was also a piece of me in my head going, okay, when the police come, what are you going to do to make it look like you're not the one attacking the Asian? And I'm like, fuck.
Wow.
Okay. I've got to call the police on myself and let them know that I'm cool. Set my phone up, set up the IG live stream, then go ahead. Like I'm being a little fanatical on that side, but there were all of these levels in my head of how could I help but also remain safe for police and people that are pulling up with even less information than I have, you know, when I circled the corner. But that's an interesting thing. We could probably explore. Matter of fact, I'm gonna pose that question to our guests. After the break, we're going to be joined by the wonderful, wonderful Norman Chin. He is the CEO and co-founder of Leading Asian American Unite for Change. We'll have him on in a second. This is Beyond the Scenes. Are you enjoying going beyond the scenes with me, Ronnie?
I'm loving it. It's the best.
It's too late. It took you too long to answer.
No, that was the lag. That was the Zoom lag.
It's too late. The commercials are starting.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
We're joined now by someone who I trust more than Ronnie Chang. You know, I'm not saying that Ronnie Chang hasn't done the work, but last I checked, Ronnie Chang wasn't the CEO and co-founder of Launch. Are you CEO and co-founder of Launch, Ronnie Chang?
No, I unfortunately was written out of the story like Hidden Figures.
Launch is Leading Asian American Unite for Change. His name is Norman Chin. Norman, thank you for joining us on Beyond the Scenes.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's jump right back into this discussion. We've talked about Ronnie's piece and everything that went down in Chinatown with Fox News, but I wanted to have you on to talk a little bit more about where we are today with regards to anti-Asian sentiment. I wanted to talk to you for a second about the status index and ways that we are able to quantify what's going on. Because the thing that we deal with, no matter what minority group you are, you're told that your whatever it is you're dealing with ain't real. It's not real. Well, everybody, of course, robbery's up. It's a pandemic. Everybody's unemployed. Like, no, man, I'm telling you, they're attacking us. So how were you all able to assess attitudes and stereotypes towards Asians over there with the status report?
Thanks, Roy. No, exactly to your point. These stereotypes and perceptions have been prevalent in American society for decades and actually are at the root cause of hate crimes. If you find and you look at research about hate crimes, they stem, just as Ronnie was saying, from stereotypes initially that then lead to scapegoating and then lead to violence during difficult times. And crisis, this is like COVID, are a once in a lifetime, hopefully. So we're seeing a repetition of the cycle of stereotypes leading to scapegoating, leading to violence. So as a new nonprofit last year, we were formed in 2020. We were looking for existing research on stereotypes of Asian Americans. And shockingly, the last study that had been done comprehensively was 20 years ago, when there are half as many Asian Americans in the country. And so we thought that's just a glaring need. There's a glaring need to do more research about stereotypes. And so we commissioned the Status Index study, which is really checking on how Americans now perceive Asian Americans. And unlike most other Asian American research that's out there, we interviewed all Americans. So not just Asian Americans about their experience, but also other racial groups. So it was quite groundbreaking this year.
How safe, or how unsafe rather, would you say Asians feel in America right now? And Ronnie, I'll throw this to you first. Just in general, during this time from 2020 till now, is your head on a swivel more than it was, say, in 2015?
I think it depends on the state. I think in Hawaii, it was...
That's
like,
such a great answer.
I mean, that's like a lot of America, right? It depends on the state, right? I will say when I went back to New York City at the peak of the pandemic and all the crimes were happening, I definitely was... You know, that's the thing, right? The internet versus real life. Real life definitely felt different to my Instagram feed in terms of the amount of violence that was happening on my Instagram feed. So real life felt way safer than compared to Instagram. But because of Instagram, man, my head was definitely on a swivel the entire time in New York City. You know, I'm looking behind my back. I'm not walking down, you know, streets I don't know. I'm sprinting.
Are you making sure the black guy behind you is at least 10 feet and not 6 feet?
No, I don't racially profile. I do my comedy shows. I run from show to show, make sure if someone's attacking me, it's because of my jokes, not because of my race. I have my phone by my side. So it's like living in New York City, but more. It's what we should have been doing over the last 5 years, but this just kind of made me more aware. And not just for myself, but for other people as well. If I see like an old Asian person on the street, I'm always like, okay, well, you know, it's my job to make sure she's okay for the length of time which she's in my field of vision. And then I pass her off to the next Asian bystander who's walking in a separate direction. So yeah, it's worth looking out for other people too, you know? When we see these videos, by the way, Norm, I don't know what you feel, and Roy, I mean, I don't know how you feel. When we see these videos happening to elderly Asian people, I'm not thinking about myself. I'm not thinking, what if that happens to me? I'm thinking, man, that looks like my relative. That looks like my grandma, like my aunt, my grand aunt. Like, I'm worried about them more than I'm worried about me.
For sure.
You know, when I see these videos, it's not like I don't stop fearing for my life. I'm like, man, what if there's another? Because the people being attacked aren't the Asian MMA fighters. You know, those aren't the people, those aren't the videos we're seeing, you know. We're seeing the people who can't really defend themselves.
To that point, when we talk about stereotypes, Norman, just in general, and just we know how much pop culture delves in that and bathes in that, you know, for a number of minorities. But it seems like it's even more unique and even worse in a way for Asians, because like some of the stereotypes will also, they'll even take something positive and just, oh, you do your homework. Oh, you're good at math. Like, shouldn't we all be good at math? Like, even when you take Ronnie's film, Crazy Rich Asians, which did, I would assume, amazing things for helping to debunk some stereotypes. People will turn around and see three well-dressed Asians walking down the street and just go, look at them rich-ass Asians. Norman, how much does pop culture play a role in that? And have you seen any improvements in any regard that would help you believe that the tide is turning in how Asians are at least portrayed in entertainment?
You know, Ron, that was one of the key areas of our research, was about how Asians are perceived in the media and TV and movies, because that's a key source of information for many communities about Asian Americans. A lot of the communities don't have Asian American friends, and so they look to movies. And the question that you may have heard of that got a lot of press was, we asked people to name a prominent Asian American, and 42% of Americans could not name a single prominent Asian American. And the number two and three answers they gave were all martial artists. Number two was Jackie Chan, who we love, but who is actually not American. He's from Hong Kong. And number three was Bruce Lee, who's also, you know, a martial artist, but has been
dead
for
a while.
50 years. So, and you look at the roles people see Asian Americans in, the men are the gangsters, they're the nerds, the technicians. The women are the masseuse workers. They're the waitress.
Every character in Rush Hour.
Exactly. All the stereotypical roles. So a lot of those stereotypes still persist. You know, our research was important because no one, again, had done this research for 20 years. So we reestablished, we quantified a baseline. This is where things are. It's not good, but at least we know where we are. Hopefully over the next 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 years, it won't be 42% of Americans who still can't name a freaking prominent Asian American. So we're hoping to track progress over time. But to your point, yes, a lot of these stereotypes still exist. The fact that Ronnie and others were able to show Asians in a positive light, right, as being successful and as being, physically attractive, right? When's the last time we saw an Asian American male take his shirt off in a movie? Well, we had a lot of that in Crazy Rich Asians, and a lot of the Asian American men in the country were celebrating that, and a lot of Asian American women as well.
Hubba, hubba.
There are definitely trends and positive signs, and I think a lot more movies and TV shows are coming out, which is really encouraging.
But this brings me back, you know, that that makes me think about the overall solution to everything we're talking about, and there is no one thing. You know, I think in America we always want this, like, we want the app that fixes everything. We want the GoFundMe that will end racism. You know, we want that one home run solution, and like, these are complicated social problems, multifactorial issues, you know, that require attacking from different places. So yeah, one aspect of the attack is, you know, Pierre Pang, Henry Golding taking their shirt off in Crazy Rich Asians. That moves the needle a little bit. It doesn't solve everything, but it definitely helps a little bit. And some of it is where the funding is going, or on the streets actual help. Some of it is legislation. Some of it is, you know, messaging. So like, all this stuff plays into it. And that's why having the data helps, because it helps us understand where we can attack. It also helps prove that there is an issue, you know?
Yeah, no, one of the questions we asked our respondents is, how would you address these problems about anti-Asian American sentiment and stereotypes in the US? And the answers were exactly what you mentioned, in terms of awareness, in terms of legislation, in terms of solidarity, in terms of more media attention. The other key solution is education, and I wanted to touch upon that. You know, when we grew up, very few of us had the opportunity to learn about Asian American history in classrooms in the U.S. And now, as you know, recently Illinois mandated the teaching of Asian American history in public schools, which is a huge milestone, and other states are moving in that direction. And so clearly more Asian American history knowledge is important. These are cycles. There were lynchings in 1871 of Asian Americans in LA. No one knows about that. A lot of people don't even know about the Japanese internment during World War II. And so to make this information more accessible to young kids, who are really the key to address before they become racist adults, we're working with a group called the Asian American Education Project to provide a graphic novel overview of the highlights of Asian American history. So think about it. You're a fourth grade, fifth grade kid. You don't want to learn even about your own history. How do you make Asian American history interesting and accessible? And we're working with an award-winning comic book writer to create an overview of it that hits all the highlights of Asian American history, so that schools and teachers and students can get this information in a very accessible way. We can share it digitally as well. These are the things we're trying to do to really have an impact, to create more education But to Ronnie's point, it's a movement that needs to happen, and we're starting to get organized, starting to have resources, but there's a ton of work to do in many different areas.
In many different areas. If anyone listening to this, if there's anything to take away from anything we're saying, is go find the people who are doing things, because there's a ton of people who care, and there's a ton of people who are doing smart things in many different areas. You know, maybe you like being a vigilante on the street. Yo, there's vigilante groups you can join to beat people up. Maybe you like being a bit more, you like raising money to help small businesses. Yo, there's organizations raising money to help the businesses in Chinatown. There's people trying to as Norm just mentioned, educate kids, you know. There's people are doing stuff.
Okay, so then let's talk solutions after the break, because I have a couple of questions of how I, non-Asian, can be a part of this. This is so dope, Ronnie. I feel like the white women talking to black people. Like, I just want you to know that I see you and I am an ally.
Thank you.
Anything
thank you, Karen.
I can do.
We're trying to get the Karens on board, yeah.
I'm black. I'm a Keith. I'm not a Keith. Behind the scenes. We'll be right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
When asked to name a prominent Asian American, Norman, I have all the statistics here, man. This is very interesting. 42% of Americans couldn't do it. 11% named Jackie Chan. 9% Bruce Lee. 5% Lucy Liu. 2% Kamala Harris. And you brought up,
Wait, hang on. What percentage did they mention me?
Hang on. Let me zoom in.
It's probably statistically insignificant.
Yeah. Trick question. Trick question, Ronnie. You're not on the list.
Next year, Ronnie, next year will be a big number.
Let's talk solutions on how I can get on that list. I want to be with the 42%.
Now, Norman, you brought up something with regards to one solution that I think makes sense, which is education and the curriculum. You know, I grew up in Alabama, I grew up in Alabama public schools, late 80s, all of the 90s. And I say this not joking. I am not joking with you. I did not meet my first Asian person until the 8th grade.
Yeah.
So in terms of these areas where a lot of this bigotry is happening and a lot of that bigotry is believed, there's not a lot of Asians there. And so I know that there's definitely a role that the school system plays. And, you know, Ronnie, you talked about people being active within their own communities and connecting with the people. It's crazy because you're basically saying the same thing that black people, the same thing we've been saying to white people. find someone that's doing the work and show up and go, what can I do?
Well, at the start, yeah, as a starting point, yeah. Yeah, as a starting point, show up and vote and show up and get involved with the organizations that are doing things. Because like I said before the break, there's a ton of organizations who are trying to help. And I'm in America by choice. I'm in America by choice because I think there's more good people there than bad people. Way more good people than bad people. And I think the fact that we are talking about this, the fact that Norm did this study, it shows that there are people who care, you know?
There's, those are kind of more of the grassroots, you know, solutions. Mm-hmm. But let's talk on the political side, Norman. Did the Anti-Asian Hate Crime Bill, the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act, is that enough from President Biden to help stop the swell of what you've seen happening in your community?
No, I mean, I think most people would agree it's the tip of the iceberg of what needs to be done, but it's a positive step in the right direction. So, you know, it helps to create more reporting channels for people to report the hate crimes. That's important. There, it sets aside money for education about racism towards Asian Americans. That's all important. But it's like the drug war. Like, you got to start it, fight the war at the source, right? What's causing these hate crimes and what's leading to the stereotypes and the scapegoating and the violence? And so media is very powerful. Hollywood, TV, movies, the news is very powerful, right? In terms of how Asian American stories are reported. And so there are groups activating to try to get more coverage about Asian American stories. Education, as we talked about, is extremely important to shape hearts and minds. We were fortunate in terms of politically to be invited by Congressman Ted Lieu to present to the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus, and where we shared our data so that the legislators and the political leaders can have more information that they can use to fight their battles. And so that's one way we're trying to link with the legislators. You know, getting Asian American history taught in schools, that requires legislation, right? And so it requires political activity. And so that is a very important channel to get things done as well.
All right, so Norman, there are certain crimes in this country that get more attention from the media than others, crimes of a racial nature. How much does the media play a role? And I the example I want to use is the mass shootings at the Asian massage parlors in Atlanta. You have a gentleman who goes from parlor to parlor killing people, and I know that there was an element of sexual addiction that was a part of that, but that does not absolve race from also being a piece of the motive for those crimes. But not only does that not get turned into, well, did he kill him because of sexual shame, or did he kill him because they were Asian, or was it a little bit of both? They just stopped talking about it altogether.
So let me amplify your point with a couple additional data points there, Roy. First of all, we did our study in March, April of this year. And one of the regrets we had when we first did the study was, gosh, I wish we had done the study before the Atlanta killings, because then even more Americans would be unaware, right? We thought everyone would know about the anti-Asian American sentiment. Shockingly, again, 32% of Americans, basically a third of Americans, say they're not aware of the increase in hate crimes towards Asian Americans in the past year. So I don't know where they're getting the information from, but clearly it's not representing the hate crimes that are affecting women in Atlanta and other places. That's one data point. The second data point is I just was on at an event in the Bay Area with Dion Lim, who's a local newscaster and really prominent activist in the Asian American community. And she says now that when she goes to her producers and has, you know, sometimes five or six anti-Asian American hate crime stories each day, they're saying, the public's not interested in these stories anymore, so we need to find something else to report on. So exactly to your point, these stories are getting buried. And so how do you solve these problems? I mean, these are systemic problems for sure. One area that a lot of people are focusing on, I think makes sense, is representation. How many of their producers or senior people at these media companies are Asian American and care about Asian American stories, right? I think that is critical. And I think that's an area where we have seen, you know, significant underrepresentation of Asian Americans in leadership positions. One of the key statistics from our study was that half of Americans think that Asian Americans are actually well represented. They think, hey, model minority, we're smart, hardworking, we must be successful, must be leaders. Well, actually, we're 50% underrepresented in terms of leadership positions, in terms of Supreme Court justices, of which there are zero Asian Americans, in terms of the corporate world, in terms of the political world, in terms of owning TV stations and movie stations, et cetera. We are severely underrepresented, yet people are under the illusion that Asian Americans are well represented. So I think representation is a key part of the puzzle. And only when you have leaders who appreciate and understand the Asian American experience and the Black experience and the Hispanic experience do we have real diversity and true, you know, accurate coverage of America. And so we're hoping that we'll see some changes in that area in the next few years as well.
All right. I'll leave you gentlemen with this question. And I'll let Norman go first because I know Ronnie and I are going to argue. How do we, Norman, get other minorities to understand that the Asian fight is also our fight? Because, and I'll just, and as a Black person, I'm just going to be, you know, very blunt with what some of the sentiment is in other communities where it's, okay, well, how do you get a anti-Asian hate crime bill before us? We've been trying to get it. How do we get other groups? Because everybody is so insular. You know, Ronnie's very right in that regard in America, where everybody's just tending to their own farm. You know, I've got my problems to deal with. The Latinos, we're focused on our things. And how do we get other minorities to understand that if anybody can break through, it's good for everybody?
Totally. Yeah, a lot of the issues that we identify apply to other racial groups and people of color. And so one of our goals is more outreach to other communities of color, to reach out to the African-American, Black community and Hispanic, Latino community. There is much more that we share in common in terms of our experience in a white America that separates us. So outreach is critical. We also believe that working closely with these partners on initiatives such as diversity in the media, such as fair representation, are really critical. So, I think it's a key part of the solution. And I say the onus is not just on both sides of the equation, right? In our study, we found that that certain communities have less interaction with Asian Americans, and so they don't know Asian American culture. That's why they see them as others. So we need to build more bridges between these communities so people can appreciate that Asian Americans, whom some people think are as cold and unfriendly and not warm, well, they've never been to my house or Ronnie's house for a dinner party, right? They've never had time to hang out with our grandparents and our parents and just really enjoy each other's company and have great Asian food together. We need to share that experience more and let people know just, you know, how warm and dynamic our culture is, and also, again, break down these barriers. So I think at the micro level, interaction among different groups is really, really critical. That's how you, just like you, I mean, you didn't meet an Asian American until eighth grade, but then once you get to know Asian Americans, then you start to have a more well-rounded understanding of them and hopefully develop good friendships. So,
Ronnie, how do you get me to care about your shit? Go. I don't mean Asians. I mean me as Roy caring about Ronnie's problems, just your personal problems.
Man, you get you invested into my life, maybe give you some equity.
I should have listened to you about fucking Bitcoin in 2015, but that's a separate conversation.
I mean, we are pretty invested in each other's lives already. I think the community as a whole, you know, someone put it to me really well once. I don't have the solutions, man. I tell jokes in bars for a living. I don't know how to save the world. What I do know is that, yeah, there's more good people than bad people in America, and that goes for minority groups. There's more good minority group people, goes without saying, obviously, than bad people. And when we join together on issues that we do agree on, it increases our voting strength. It creates a more powerful voting bloc. Because Asian people are what? 4%, Norm? Was it 4%?
7%? 7%. 23 million strong.
Right. And what's the African Americans are what?
13.
Latinos,
well, hang on. Nick
what?
Cannon just had four more kids, so African Americans are 14.
Latinos are what? If you join all together, there's a voting block there. You know, there's a stronger voting block, which allows you, if we work together to get legislation passed, it benefits all of us, you know? And nothing against white people too. We need white people to help out, and most white people are on board. But when you're, it's so hard to explain sometimes, and that's why only minorities get that, and that's why we should get along in America, is because sometimes it's not that anyone is blatantly being evil. It's just that the system is set up in a way that you can't even begin to explain the issues you're having. How many times have you gone into a room and been like, none of these people are even gonna get what I'm saying? I'm talking about my, you know, Asian grandma on the streets who, you know, they don't understand what, they're not gonna get it. Whereas if you talk to Latino people or black people, they'll understand it more. And so if we can get more like-minded people in decision-making positions, you know, that's where kind of we can start moving the needle with change. And that's why we should be joining together as a voting bloc. You know, that's my argument to you, Roy. I mean, you can also turn your back on me as you always do. And, you know, we can, America will continue
don't
on.
Tell
and
these lies. You know what I view? I view America as a DMV. And everybody's in there for their own issue. But the moment one person starts complaining, you need three other people to start complaining, and then that line of justice will move a little bit faster. Norman Chin from Launch, thank you so much. Leading Asian American Unite for Change. Visit them online, launch.org. That's launch, like the space shuttle, with two A's, launch. Because I know I have a Southern drawl, and you think I said lunch. And I didn't say lunch. I said launch, like a rocket, two A's, .org. Norman, thank you so much for coming beyond the scenes with me.
Thank you so much, Roy. Thank you, Ronnie.
And Ronnie, I'll see you whenever the fuck we're back in the office.
Yeah, I'll see you soon, yeah. Man. Good, clean up your side, please.
Okay. All right. That's it. Take care, everybody. Listen to The Daily Show Beyond the Scenes on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.